Chapter 14. Chief Inspector Lizard observed. But how is this? Venus should traverse the sun's surface, not the Earth's. Piero went home. It earned sorrow to the breast of every apostle of learning there, for none could deny that this was a formidable criticism. But tranquilly the venerable Duke crossed his limbs behind his ears and said, My friend has touched the marrow of our mighty discovery. Yes, all that have lived before us thought a transit of Venus consisted of a flight across the sun's face. They thought it, they maintained it, they honestly believed it, simple hearts, and were justified in it by the limitations of their knowledge. But to us has been granted the inestimable boon of proving that the transit occurs across the Earth's face, for we have seen it. The assembled wisdom sat in speechless adoration of this imperial intellect. All doubts had instantly departed, like night before the lightning. The tumble bug had just intruded, unnoticed. He now came reeling forward among the scholars, familiarly slapping first one, and then another on the shoulder, saying, Isaac, nice old boy, and smiling a smile of elaborate content. Arrived at a good position for speaking, he put his left arm akimbo with his knuckles planted in his hip just under the edge of his cutaway coat, bent his right leg, placing his toe on the ground, and resting his heel with easy grace against his left shin, puffed out his aldermanic stomach, opened his lips, leaned his right elbow on Inspector Lizard's shoulder, and, but the shoulder was indignantly withdrawn, and the hard-handed son of toil went to earth. He floundered a bit, but came up smiling, arranged his attitude with the same careful detail as before, only choosing Professor Dogtick's shoulder for a support, opened his lips, and went to earth again. He presently scrambled up once more, still smiling, made a loose effort to brush the dust off his coat and legs, but a smart pass of his hand missed entirely, and the force of the unchecked impulse stewed him suddenly around. Twisted his legs together, and projected him, limber and sprawling, into the lap of the Lord Longlegs. Two or three scholars sprang forward, flung the low creature head over heels into a corner, and reinstated the patrician, smoothing his ruffled dignity with many soothing and regretful speeches. Professor Bullfrog roared out, No more of this, sir, a tumble bug. Say your say, and then get you about your business with speed. Quick, what is your errand? Come move off a trifle, you smell like a stable, what have you been at? Please, Ick. Please your worship, I chanced to light upon a find. But no Ick. Matter about that. There's be Ick. Been another find which beg pardon, your honors, what was that th Ick? Thing that ripped by here first? It was the vernal equinox. Ick. Vernal equinox. That's all right. Dick. Dunno him. What's other one? The transit of Venus. Dick. Got me again. No matter. Losses one drop something. Ah, indeed. Good luck. Good news. Quick, what is it? Ick. Mosey out and see. It'll pay. No more votes were taken for 24 hours. Then the following entry was made. The commission went in a body to view the find. It was found to consist of a hard, smooth, huge object with a rounded summit surmounted by a short upright projection resembling a section of a cabbage stalk divided transversely. This projection was not solid, but was a hollow cylinder plugged with a soft woody substance unknown to our region, that is, it had been so plugged. But unfortunately this obstruction had been heedlessly removed by Norway Rat, chief of the sappers and miners, before our arrival. The vast object before us, so mysteriously conveyed from the glittering domains of space, was found to be hollow, and nearly filled with a pungent liquid of a brownish hue, like rainwater that has stood for some time. And such a spectacle as met our view. Norway Rat was perched upon the summit engaged in thrusting his tail into the cylindrical projection, drawing it out dripping, permitting the struggling multitude of laborers to suck the end of it, then straightway reinserting it and delivering the fluid to the mob as before. Evidently this liquor had strangely potent qualities. For all that partook of it were immediately exalted with great and pleasurable emotions, and went staggering about singing ribald songs, embracing, fighting, dancing, discharging eruptions of profanity, and defying all authority. Around us struggled a massed and uncontrolled mob, uncontrolled and likewise uncontrollable, for the whole army, down to the very sentinels, were mad like the rest, by reason of the drink. We were seized upon by these reckless creatures, and within the hour we, even we, were undistinguishable from the rest. The demoralization was complete and universal. In time the camp wore itself out with its orgies, and sank into a stolid and pitiable stupor, in whose mysterious bonds rank was forgotten and strange bedfellows made. Our eyes, at the resurrection, being blasted and our souls petrified with the incredible spectacle of that intolerable stinking scavenger, the tumble bug, and the illustrious patrician my lord granddaddy, Duke of Longlegs, lying soundly steeped in sleep, and clasped lovingly in each other's arms, the like whereof hath not been seen in all the ages that tradition compasseth, and doubtless none shall ever in this world find faith to master the belief of it save only we that have beheld the damnable and unholy vision. Thus inscrutable be the ways of God, whose will be done. This day, by order, did the engineer-in-chief, Herr Spider, rig the necessary tackle for the overturning of the vast reservoir, and so its calamitous contents were discharged in a torrent upon the thirsty earth, which drank it up, and now there is no more danger, we reserving but a few drops for experiment and scrutiny, and to exhibit to the king, and subsequently preserve among the wonders of the museum. What this liquid is has been determined. It is without question, that fierce and most destructive fluid called lightning. It was wrested, in its container, from its storehouse in the clouds, by the resistless might of the flying planet, and hurled at our feet as she sped by. An interesting discovery here results, which is, that lightning, kept to itself, is quiescent. It is the assaulting contact of the thunderbolt, that releases it from captivity, ignites its awful fires, and so produces an instantaneous combustion and explosion which spread disaster and desolation far and wide in the earth. After another day devoted to rest and recovery, the expedition proceeded upon its way. Some days later it went into camp in a pleasant part of the plain, and the savants sallied forth to see what they might find. Their reward was at hand. Professor Bullfrog discovered a strange tree, and called his comrades. They inspected it with profound interest. It was very tall and straight, and wholly devoid of bark, limbs, or foliage. By triangulation Lord Longlegs determined its altitude. Herr Spider measured its circumference at the base, and computed the circumference at its top by a mathematical demonstration based upon the warrant furnished by the uniform degree of its taper upward. It was considered a very extraordinary find, and since it was a tree of a hitherto unknown species, Professor Woodlouse gave it a name of a learned sound, being none other than that of Professor Bullfrog translated into the ancient Mastodon language, for it had always been the custom with discoverers to perpetuate their names and honor themselves by this sort of connection with their discoveries. Now Professor Field Mouse, having placed his sensitive ear to the tree, detected a rich, harmonious sound issuing from it. This surprising thing was tested and enjoyed by each scholar in turn, and great was the gladness and astonishment of all. Professor Woodlouse was requested to add to, and extend the tree's name so, as to make it suggest the musical quality it possessed, which he did, furnishing the addition anthem singer, done into the mastodon tongue. By this time Professor Snail was making some telescopic inspections. He discovered a great number of these trees, extending in a single rank, with wide intervals between, as far as his instrument would carry, both southward and northward. He also presently discovered that all these trees were bound together, near their tops, by 14 great ropes, one above another, which ropes were continuous, from tree to tree, as far as his vision could reach. This was surprising. Chief Engineer Spider ran aloft and soon reported that these ropes were simply a web hung there by some colossal member of his own species, for he could see its prey dangling here and there from the strands, in the shape of mighty shreds and rags that had a woven look about their texture, and were no doubt the discarded skins of prodigious insects which had been caught and eaten. And then he ran along one of the ropes, to make a closer inspection, but felt a smart sudden burn on the soles of his feet, accompanied by a paralyzing shock, wherefore he let go and swung himself to the earth by a thread of his own spinning, and advised all to hurry at once to camp, lest the monster should appear and get as much interested in the savants as they were in him and his works. So they departed with speed, making notes about the gigantic web as they went. And that evening the naturalist of the expedition built a beautiful model of the colossal spider, having no need to see it in order to do this, because he had picked up a fragment of its vertebra by the tree, and so knew exactly what the creature looked like, and what its habits and its preferences were by this simple evidence alone. He built it with a tail, teeth, 14 legs, and a snout, and said it ate grass, cattle, pebbles, and dirt with equal enthusiasm. This animal was regarded as a very precious addition to science. It was hoped a dead one might be found to stuff. Professor Woodlouse thought that he and his brother scholars, by lying hid and being quiet, might maybe catch a live one. He was advised to try it, which was all the attention that was paid to his suggestion. The conference ended with the naming the monster after the naturalist, since he, after God, had created it. And improved it, mayhap, muttered the tumble bug, who was intruding again, according to his idle custom and his unappeasable curiosity. End of part first. Some learned fables for good old boys and girls. Part second, how the animals of the wood completed their scientific labors. A week later the expedition camped in the midst of a collection of wonderful curiosities. These were a sort of vast caverns of stone, that rose singly, and in bunches out of the plain by the side of the river which they had first seen, when they emerged from the forest. These caverns stood in long, straight rows on opposite sides of broad aisles that were beordered with single ranks of trees. The summit of each cavern sloped sharply both ways. Several horizontal rows of great square holes, obstructed by a thin, shiny, transparent substance, pierced the frontage of each cavern. Inside were caverns within caverns, and one might ascend and visit these minor compartments by means of curious winding ways consisting of continuous regular terraces raised one above another. There were many huge shapeless objects in each compartment which were considered to have been living creatures at one time, though now the thin brown skin was shrunken and loose, and rattled when disturbed. Spiders were here in great number, and their cobwebs, stretched in all directions and wreathing the great skinny dead together, were a pleasant spectacle, since they inspired with life and wholesome cheer a scene which would otherwise have brought to the mind only a sense of forsakenness and desolation. Information was sought of these spiders, but in vain. They were of a different nationality from those with the expedition, and their language seemed but a musical meaningless jargon. They were a timid, gentle race, but ignorant, and heathenish worshippers of unknown gods. The expedition detailed a great detachment of missionaries to teach them the true religion, and in a week's time a precious work had been wrought among those darkened creatures, not three families being by that time at peace with each other, or having a settled belief in any system of religion whatever. This encouraged the expedition to establish a colony of missionaries there permanently, that the work of grace might go on. But let us not outrun our narrative. After close examination of the fronts of the caverns, and much thinking and exchanging of theories, the scientists determined the nature of these singular formations. They said that each belonged mainly to the old red sandstone period, that the cavern fronts rose in innumerable and wonderfully regular strata high in the air, each stratum about 5 frog spans thick, and that in the present discovery lay an overpowering refutation of all received geology. For between every 2 layers of old red sandstone reposed a thin layer of decomposed limestone. So instead of there having been but one old red sandstone period, there had certainly been not less than 175. And by the same token it was plain that there had also been 175 floodings of the earth and depositings of limestone strata. The unavoidable deduction from which pair of facts was the overwhelming truth that the world, instead of being only 200,000 years old, was older by millions upon millions of years. And there was another curious thing. Every stratum of old red sandstone was pierced and divided at mathematically regular intervals by vertical strata of limestone. Upshootings of igneous rock through fractures in water formations were common. But here was the first instance where water-formed rock had been so projected. It was a great and noble discovery, and its value to science was considered to be inestimable. A critical examination of some of the lower strata demonstrated the presence of fossil ants and tumble bugs, the latter accompanied by their peculiar goods, and with high gratification the fact was enrolled upon the scientific record. For this was proof that these vulgar laborers belonged to the first and lowest orders of created beings, though at the same time there was something repulsive in the reflection that the perfect and exquisite creature of the modern uppermost order owed its origin to such ignominious beings through the mysterious law of development of species. The tumble bug, overhearing this discussion, said he was willing that the parvenus of these new times should find what comfort they might in their wise-drawn theories, since as far as he was concerned he was content to be of the old first families, and proud to point back to his place among the old original aristocracy of the land. Enjoy your mushroom dignity, stinking of the varnish of yesterday's veneering, since you like it, said he. Suffice it for the tumble bugs that they come of a race that rolled their fragrant spheres down the solemn aisles of antiquity, and left their imperishable works embalmed in the old red sandstone, to proclaim it to the wasting centuries as they file along the highway of time. Oh, take a walk, said the chief of the expedition, with derision. The summer passed, and winter approached. In and about many of the caverns were what seemed to be inscriptions. Most of the scientists said they were inscriptions, a few said they were not. The chief philologist, Professor Woodlouse, maintained that they were writings, done in a character utterly unknown to scholars, and in a language equally unknown. He had early ordered his artists and draftsmen to make facsimiles of all that were discovered, and had set himself about finding the key to the hidden tongue. In this work he had followed the method which had always been used by decipherers previously. That is to say, he placed a number of copies of inscriptions before him, and studied them both collectively and in detail. To begin with, he placed the following copies together. The American Hotel. Meals at all hours. The Shades. No smoking. Boats for hire, cheap union prayer meeting, 6 p.m. Billiards. The Waterside Journal. The A1 Barbershop. Telegraph Office. Keep off the grass. Try Brandreth's Pills. Cottages for rent during the watering season. For sale cheap. For sale cheap. For sale cheap. For sale cheap. At first it seemed to the professor that this was a sign language, and that each word was represented by a distinct sign. Further examination convinced him that it was a written language, and that every letter of its alphabet was represented by a character of its own, and finally he decided that it was a language which conveyed itself partly by letters, and partly by signs or hieroglyphics. This conclusion was forced upon him by the discovery of several specimens of the following nature. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.